perceptions are sound. They are real and they are recognizable and they are realistic. But in the course of constant renovations and revolutions and definite reformations, the integrities have in many cases vanished from view. They are there, but we do not notice them. But people looking for a religion see the mistakes of the various faiths and assume these mistakes are the realities. Therefore, they turn from a religion which has been destroyed by their own kind and not by the weakness of its own internal structure. Most religions can be useful if they are developed with integrity and honesty. But where they become bound into sectarian debates, where they become the basis of conflict and discord, then religions do the very thing they were supposed to prevent, and that is to contribute to the sufferings of mankind. So religion is important to us. And now we begin to see a new dimension of religion. And in some cases it looks rather good, and in other cases it's a little bit disturbing. And on the one side is people looking for religion inside themselves and creating their own concepts of religion. That the individual has decided to try and create a religion for himself. Now, this is quite an interesting job for a person who really has no training in this. And each person trying to create a religion suitable to his own needs gets into complications. He doesn't really know what he's doing. But in the course of years, these people who do not know what they're doing really sometimes become quite popular and have a considerable following and spread the uncertainties among their associates. Now, this doesn't mean that these people are bad or wrong or anything, but it means that you not only have to have a good religion, but you have to have in yourself the ability to judge it, to find out whether it is good or not, and to divide the wheat from the chaff in this field also. To be a successful member of a living faith, you must understand that faith, and you must understand the demands that it makes upon you. A faith that promises everything and demands nothing is not really suitable to the needs of the moment. It never was. If we have a religion which does not demand improvement, that is a religion that is largely a panacea based upon some trivial interpretation, then it is not going to do the job that is needed today. Religion today has to strengthen the real meanings of faith, love, compassion, and integrity. Now, to do this, it also must have some way of reaching into the life of the individual and causing him to believe that there is something better that he can learn and can practice. Well, there are all kinds of things that need doing, and it's almost impossible to have a good thought without being able to use it constructively. But above everything else, there are certain major factors of belief. And these factors of belief are still tarnished by the name of religion, when in reality they are the basis of integrities. As Lord Bacon so well mentioned in one of his essays, that it is better to believe all the absurdities that have been distributed in various creeds and cults than it is to deny that this universal fabric has a mind, that this universal fabric is itself an entity, that it is something that has nature, has will, has power, has force, has value, and the individual has to discover what it is. So each person in this confused time is becoming aware of the desperate need for religious convictions that are strong enough to take over the dominant leadership of the personality. An individual's religion must be big enough so that he can believe it himself, that he cannot be talked out of it by ordinary circumstances or misinformed associates. Religion must now take its own place. And of religion today, the most appropriate and most powerful is mysticism. Mysticism is basically a process of transferring religious leadership from a sect, a creed, or a prophet to the inside of the person himself. A mystic is an individual whose religion is seated in his own soul, that it is justified by his own soul, that it is sustained by his own mind, and is made more important and potent by his own feelings, and is finally demonstrated by his own actions. Religion, therefore, is now coming in as a search for consolation of spirit. It is seeking to give the strength to understand why the individual must pass through the emergencies with which most are afflicted. But more than that, this has within it another factor. When a person finds a deep faith within himself, which helps him to stand against the false pressures of his day, he feels an almost inevitable impulse to tell other people about it. He wants them to know also. But here you come into trouble, because most people are not able to communicate correctly. In fact, the greatest mystics of all times have been unable to communicate mysticism. Vaini couldn't do it, Plotinus couldn't do it, and in very large measure, Jesus couldn't do it. The actual mystical experience cannot be described, cannot be transformed or transferred into some articulate structure by which it can be easily demonstrated. The final mysticism of religion is completely internal, but the need for it spreading through society is like planting seeds in a large field. The need for this consolation falling into each human soul will, with reasonable care and thought, help that soul to grow and help to produce from within that soul the solution to its own problems. Solutions that will stand not only the test of time, but the test of eternity. Now, there are many ways in which we should face these situations in order to try to help not only our world, but our own immediate environment. Looking around us, we know definitely that we are an impermanent creation moving through time and space, that we are here today and gone tomorrow. But when we are gone, we are not gone forever. The end of material existence is not to be summarized by the atheist who says there is nothing, or by some theologians who believe the hellfire and damnation beliefs. Somewhere in the thing, it must be found by the individual that death is merely a day in school, a step from one grade to another, a motion from one level to another, and that in the long analysis of things, many deaths and lives must come in order for the individual to consolidate one character within himself. The power within the individual by which the body should be governed does not die with it. The power within the individual by means of which he can lead himself and those around him into a sharing inspirations and understandings. These powers go on, they live on, they do not die with the person. They are part of an eternal heritage. Also, we each has a growth. We have a growth in which we are growing up inside. Now, some people find it easier to live well than others. Some have more temptations to stress and pain than others have. This means, of course, difference in the background of the soul life itself. It means that the individual has had experiences which are not completely shared by those around him. But the fact remains that we are here to enrich that which survives. The only thing worth working with is that which does not die. And the only thing that does not die in man or in the universe is life. Life itself does not die. Forms and shadows and appearances come and go. But the great stream of life to which we all belong is immortal. It goes on forever. But in the course of going on, it presents a series of challenges. The individual must find ways to experience the true meaning of life. He must learn to have within his own flesh a positive certainty concerning life. It is not something that he can read out of a book. It is not something a neighbor can convert him to, or a theology convert him to. It is the inward justification of a code of ethics because of an interior example within the self, because of an interior experience, a vital recognition and realization of the integrity of existence. This is important. This is necessary. No one can give it to us, but conditions can demand it. The present situation we're in, for the first time in the development of modern civilization, has proven to us beyond all doubt that civilization as we know it is not enough. The material advancement of mankind is not the solution, either of his spiritual destiny or, for that matter, of his material continuance. The individual now can and must begin to look toward the integrities of life. He must weigh his own thoughts. He must consider his own teachings and those that have been given to him. He can draw upon his education. He can draw upon the wisdom of the past and the hopes of the future. But he must, in his own way, find inside of himself an irresistible determination to grow. And he gets it only when he realizes that the alternative is too terrible to contemplate. If he doesn't grow, the great misfortunes will continue together and paralyze him. He must grow. He must use the facilities of life. He's been placed in this world as in a condition in which he has everything necessary to learn. He has all knowledge available to life. He has the entire structure of the universe to help him. He has the intuitive and spiritual and soul powers within himself to help him. He has every hope and every reason to know that he can grow from within himself, that he can become a good and faithful tenant or a good and faithful servant in the house of his God. He can do it by his own gradual recognitions. He can learn to just read across the headings of a newspaper and find why he should change his own conduct. He can find everywhere the eternal sorrows resulting from compromise and from breaking away from the integrities of life. So in these conditions and for these reasons, there is every hope that this is going to be the great turning point in civilization. We have had all kinds of things. In the beginning, with war, we threw stones at each other. Then we used a stone axe. Finally, we developed a bow and arrow, then a spear, and then a lance thrower. We developed all kinds of situations, finally making a rude cannon out of wood bound with metal. We invented firearms. We did all these different things. We improved all the implements of war up to the present time, where we have had almost every conceivable way of destroying each other. And we have used all of them with great enthusiasm. And every war, nearly, was one to bring peace to the world. And each one made it worse. Now, with thousands of wars behind us, there is no reason why an individual who is not feeble-minded to believe that they're going to solve anything. And now he gets a new point. In the days of the bow and arrow, it wasn't so bad. You could dodge behind a tree and probably not get hit. In India, they had the answer to one phase of it. When the armies decided to meet in battle, it was necessary to go to the head man of a community or something and say, we want to have a war. And we want to have it on a piece of land that is so bad nothing else will grow on it. We don't want to interfere with the crops because victor and loser must both eat. We do not want to endanger the innocent. So if you can show us where there's a nice quiet desert where nobody cares, there we'll have our war. Now that at least was military efficiency. It's probably one of the best ideas they had. And there are accounts in Indian literature of farmers plowing the field with their oxen, paying no attention to a clash of arms maybe a couple of hundred yards away. the war was on the bad part of the ground, and the farmer never bothered to stop sowing and reaping just because there was a war next door to him. And the warriors in the war would not think of disturbing him because they all had to eat. Well, we haven't even reached the point now where we realize the importance of peace as a source of food. We always figure we are going to capture enough of the enemy's supplies to keep our own stomachs full for a little while. But now it's all different. The ground will not bring forth a crop. All the things we are doing are becoming more and more insane. So we are confronted now with a simple, very simple fact that the average person must see this. And it's getting to the point where nearly everyone does see it. And when they all see it, or most of them see it, or a good many of them see it, there's going to be changes produced by the recognition of the urgency of the need for change. We're going to not do the things that we know will cause destruction. We will curb our ambitions and our appetites and find ways by which we can survive. And it looks as though we're right on the verge of this change, which has been referred to in some cases as a new world order, a new approach to life, a great way of existence based largely on the golden rule, a great new dimension of existence in which leadership and all phases of administration will be handled with integrity rather than simply selfish enthusiasm. So we now feel that there's much to be gained by realizing that this crisis is probably the best thing that has ever happened to us, because it is the first time when we can simply state clearly, one more mistake and we are not here. Well, always there was somebody that got away before. They managed to come out of the country. They moved into other lands. They were able to restore their civilization and escape most of the horrors following war. But now, with the nuclear weapons, there is no escape. So now, solution is necessary. And solution will be found. And it looks as though that solution is going to bring with it also a very important restatement of religion. And we're going to find that religion is, in the last analysis, is the one power that is capable of protecting the mind and the body from its own mistakes. This gradually is developing. All around, people are working, some better, some not so wisely, but all more or less dedicated and devoted to preventing an ultimate disaster. If that is done, then all has been done that could be done. The whole of civilization is a success if the human being becomes civilized. And civilization and the getting together and the recognition of the dangers of selfishness and cupidity, ambition, tyranny, when these things are recognized, humanity will make the greatest step forward since the beginning of its individualization. We will all grow. We will all have a new world to live in. We will have a new kind of earth, because we will have learned the lesson well enough to keep the rules, which is the thing that is essential at this time. So if we start with the little problem of who runs the world, and we decide that it is run by a divine power, we also decide that regardless of what we do, we are not going to break the rules of that power. In order to evade the rules, we have to deny the power. And as we look around us, even science can no longer deny the power. We can see, learn, and know the immensity of the universe. We may not be able to understand all of its distances, and we may not be able to find out exactly what is on the other side of a black hole. But we do gain one great overthought, and that is the universe is big. We also find out as we go along that the universe is a perfectly organized structure. Every discovery of science depends for its validity upon the fact that it is supported by other previous scientific discoveries. Everything that we learn by building upon the known. And in the world of realities, if we build correctly upon the known, we take the next step forward. Therefore, there's no doubt in the world that science has demonstrated to us that there's something out there that knows how to run it, and we don't. There's something out there that we will work with for ages before we ever begin to sound the depths of these realities that go out beyond the furthest reaches of space and time. We know we are dwelling in the midst of immensity, and that this immensity is organized, that it is fair, honest, reasonable, and intelligent. So having come to some such a conclusion as that, we now come to the point where we know enough about the facts of life to be able to appreciate the next steps that are necessary. We do not have to step out into the unknown with a hope that we're right. We have enough foundations now to build a concept of life that is intelligent, workable, and suitable to the needs of the modern human being. We know today that we can build a religion that is irrefutable, that does not depend upon the acceptance of myths or legends, that does not depend upon a membership brought on by enthusiasm or any other consideration. A universal religion built upon a universal intelligence and integrity is available to us. We are, for the first time in history, awarded sufficient fact knowledge to be able to build world peace. We are reaching a point where there is no intelligent excuse for the mistakes that are burdening us today. They are not inevitable results of ignorance, but they are more or less the consequence of the individual serving the wrong peer group. He is serving or uniting with others that do not know either, instead of working towards that which does know. So Plotinus, as a Neoplatonist, almost clearly summed up this particular situation, namely that the enlightenment, the next coming of truth, comes in us as the result of the suffering of mistakes. Inside of each of us, there is a dawning enlargement of a realization that as ye sow, so shall ye reap. And this discovery is the beginning of universal reformation. When this realization reaches enough people, there will be no more excuse for the vandalisms with which we are now afflicting ourselves. But the whole change is not going to be thrown upon us by a denomination. It is going to arise out of our own need. It is going to be the soul in us coming to comfort us in our dilemmas. It is going to be something that will educate us, not by word of book or by word of mouth, but by realization, by feelings, by experiences, the way that leads finally out of this labyrinth and toward the security of all things. I think we are very fortunate, therefore, in living right now, because maybe we've lived many times before, but we've never had a life before which was as decisional as the one we are in now. In this life, ages of experience, preparation, thought, effort, all these things are being focused upon now, the time in which it is supremely hoped that between now and the end of the century, the real realities will take hold, that we will outgrow the foolishness of selfishness, that we will outgrow the vanity of power, and that we will discover the real reason for our existence. If that happens, then the human being can do the things he was supposed to do. In a nice, well-ordered universe, a well-ordered human society, we have people with time. It will not be necessary to neglect children. It will not be necessary to build more and bigger prisons. It will not be necessary for us to compete with our neighbor for the size of the front door. These things will go, and the mind and heart will be left for the two great labors with which we should all be concerned, the labor of growing wiser and the labor of loving more honestly. Love and faith and truth can take over as soon as the individual discovers for certain and beyond doubt that selfishness is fatal, that there is no way in which it can be condoned, and that all of our material efforts build on the concept of building a tremendous temporal empire on our little planet. These efforts are wasted. There is nothing possible on this little planet but a nice little civilization, appropriate to the size of the planet, appropriate to the needs of the people, and proper to maintain the resources of the planet. We can have a nice little world of our own and live in it, bring our children into it, work with them, overcome most of the diseases and problems of life, have a comparatively healthy career, friendly, good-natured, honest, busy, with plenty of activity and variation of enterprise and a constant enlargement of humanitarian impulses. The only thing is, there will not be anywhere near the poverty that needs our humanitarianism. What is not used in that way will be used to advance the common good in a positive direction rather than to make abeyances or try to estimate the needs that have been created by dishonor. All these things will help. And this is why I think we have to realize, for once and for all, get out of our minds that we own the planet. We don't own the planet. We've got to get in harmony with the big landlord. We've got to decide what we're going to do in harmony with universal purpose. We are in need of becoming good and faithful workers in a common cause. We are in need more and more of vision, for the lack of which the people perish. So if we can get rid of this idea that this physical world is all important, and while we watch it disintegrate, it is time to think about other things. The world is only important because if we don't have it, we keep on falling indefinitely, because there'll be nothing under our feet. But it is not the answer to our problem. The answer to our problem is that on this little planet, as in a little schoolhouse, we are going to learn to live together, love together, build together, work together, and cooperate for the glory of God and the good of humanity. When we get to that point, you'll be surprised. This will be a rather pleasant place. All the problems that now burden us, all the diseases which now afflict us, will gradually fade away if we stop breaking the rules. Because misery is a penalty for mistake. And many times the mistake is without knowledge. We don't intend to make the mistake. Nature tells us that if we don't stub our toe, we'll never learn to walk better. So all the problems that come along help us. If we have the right consciousness in ourselves, we can build an educational system that fits young people to live. We can build a world civilization in which older persons can have a joyous experience of the fulfillment of their years. We can have busy people doing wonderful and beautiful things. And we will have the big landlord finally happy and running his big institution, his great set of condominiums, with peace and understanding. It all works together. We will never know, as one of the Greeks said, we will never know that there are rules unless we break them. If we keep them, everything goes along perfectly. We don't need to even know about them. But when we start to break them, it's all different. Well, we've been breaking them too long. So now it comes the time when, instead of breaking them, we've got to work with them and for them, for the preservation of our way of life. So we have people, we are doing it ourselves, trying to tell others little ideas to help them grow a bit more, trying to get people to realize that growth is dedication to unfoldment of integrities, that it is not something in which we can gain admission by buying or by investing in the ordinary sense of the word. Growth is through the constant enlargement of conscience, a greater understanding, a greater participation in the work of the world, that in the individual is no longer mindful always of himself, he will have a much better world. Also, there's no question in the world, factually, that if we can get this thing where it belongs, that the entire cycle of human life will lose most of its miseries. There's no reason why a properly balanced world, properly functioned, should be continually plagued with the pains of childbirth, the pains of sickness, the pains of age, of the miseries of transition. These things are all part of an imperfect way of life. If we understand properly, if we live the life, most of the sorrows of life will fade. And by keeping a few simple rules, we can greatly alter the health patterns of the whole of society. Everything depends on the fact that the human body is itself a little empire. And when it breaks its own rules, or its rules are broken, then the body suffers. And then in the body structure, man himself is the big overseer, the big landlord running his own body, which has more parts in it, perhaps, and more units of life in it than the whole planet has in creations here. Always the leader has the responsibility of creating by rules, and those who follow must perpetuate by keeping those rules. And in the end, if we keep the rules of life will keep us. And we will find that nearly all of the miseries that we know in life are the result of not learning the facts of life, and in developing a tremendous education which teaches us everything except what we need to know. Every child graduating from school should recognize and know his responsibilities to society and himself, and should find the greatest fulfillment and joy in playing his part in the improvement of human civilization. All these things will come, and they're nearer than they ever been before, and if you look around you, I think you'll see that they're very much nearer than they used to be. And if you look inside of you, I think you'll find, all of you, that they're nearer there, too, than they ever have been before. Oh, that's it. Thank you.